This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps, and each week with an inspiring guest, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. So, here we go. This week, we're talking all about the menopause with Gráinne Clancy, a wonderful counsellor here in Dublin, who I had the privilege of interviewing a few years back. The jury's actually out. I thought it was maybe 2 or 3 years, but I think it's been longer. It's a reminder how long this show has been running. And it was lovely to catch up with her again and record this episode in person, which a lot of the time since the pandemic, we don't do anymore. You know, we're in the habit of the Zoom recordings, and that's part of the reason we can have such multinational guests on the show. So it was lovely to sit down with her, have a catch up and record this together. Gráinne is also an increasingly prominent voice on talking about menopause and the need for education around it in Ireland. And so we get into stigma, we get into misinformation, we get into social media, and so many factors in this conversation, and indeed that link to mental health generally. So with that all said, we'll get into this conversation in a moment, but first... Who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
My name is Gráinne Clancy, and I have been interested in menopause kind of for the last 3 years, but looking back on my life, probably all my life. So my earliest memory of kind of menopause was a lady in the corner shop, and she used to get really red-faced and kind of knew it was like the change she was going through, but that was all I knew about it. So yeah, it was a topic that really wasn't discussed as a teenager. And I suppose in those days we had no computers, so the lack of information was massive. So if you wanted to get any information from any charity, it was having to like send away a stamped address envelope, get the information, get that back, get a postal order, send that off, and then get the information. And then if you find there was a book that you wanted to learn about, it was then send again another, getting the money, and then send another postal order off just to learn about that time PMS. And yeah, it was just, whereas now we have access to information at the drop of a button. We've also access to other people that are going through what we're going through. So there's so many forums out there, you know, talking about menstruation, talking about pregnancy, talking about perimenopause, menopause. Like, I have no idea how many there is, but I know, you know, there's groups in Ireland, there's groups in the north. Like, there's groups everywhere. So that access to information is... It can be amazing, but it can also be kind of scary. What's reliable, what's not reliable?
Yeah, and that's the difficult thing of the digital age, isn't it? That we can have all this information, but it's knowing kind of what's correct. And, you know, there can be so much misinformation around this in the same way, you know, we both grew up with glaring gaps in sex education. And yeah. So, you know, no wonder kind of rumours go around schools and some of the things... Like I think I've told you about before, a cousin of mine was taught by nuns growing up, and so their sex education was not based on any kind of science. It was abstinence, and then it was rumours because, you know, the nuns didn't know. So one of the things she told me was that one of them had told her, if you put bread in your underwear, that will prevent pregnancy.
Yeah, and it's crazy. And like going back, you know, I was reading recently, well, this year, the medical profession were looking for sex education from 1935 because, as it was known then, venereal disease or STDs, as they're known now, were going through the roof in Ireland, you know? So there was a lack of education about it. And even, like, if we look back, I think it was, like, 1994 in Drogheda, there was a nightclub had condom machines. And the guards were called and it was taken down because it wasn't appropriate to have a condom machine in a nightclub. So much. And yet there's still this lack of education. There's this huge stigma. And again, this is shifting as well. Mm-hmm. Definitely, I think with younger generations, talking about menstruation, talking about the impact that that has. And like, I suppose in some ways I was lucky because in Lower Sixth, you know, I went to an Old Grimms Catholic school and we got information. I think there have been a couple of girls in our year that have got pregnant. So the year before, so we got information about the different types of contraception. And then at the bottom were the two methods that were approved by the Catholic Church, you know? So, yeah, it was mad.
Yeah, methods in quotation marks.
Yeah, and we did get education, but it was all very physical. It didn't look at all at the psychological impact of it all. And I suppose now, you know, the access to technology has kind of swung the other way, that, you know, young people are learning about sex if they're not getting in school, are gaining access to pornography and thinking, oh, that's how you have sex. Which is a very, you know, it's very sad to think that it's a very, that's what expected. And a lot of pressure is put on young people now to think, well, that's what sex is. When it's not, you know, it's hardcore porn is very cold. And yeah, so there's a lot of information, misinformation, and so much to learn about menstruation, sex, perimenopause, that doesn't even come into it, you know. So yeah, so we have a long way to go. We're making progress, you know. Like 1971, yeah, I think it was 1971, Mrs. McGee was the first woman to win the right to contraception, because it was 50 years ago on the 21st of December. And now we can get the contraceptive pill now, you know, but that's how far, and it took to 1979 for that to be enacted. So you have all that history of, well, you don't talk about that, and the impact that has. So it's when you start delving into this whole area of women, menstruation, perimenopause, it is massive. It is absolutely massive. And then, you know, another group that can have a huge impact on is if you identify as trans, identify as a trans man, and you're having periods every month, that can be really upsetting, because it's a reminder every month that you're in a body that you don't want to be in. So it's massive.
And like you say, you know, things have moved on a lot, but then, you know, we're talking and we went through a lot of, you know, that lack of education we describe, you know, that's still carrying on. And, you know, there's the lack of sex education, which we kind of, you know in today's form, and it is so much more mainstream. But then there's also a further lack of, okay, but what about the further stages? You know, it's one thing sort of when menstruation starts, and it's another thing, where's the education for when it stops?
Yeah. And it isn't there, you know. Yeah, we're making progress, but yeah, there's not, like, there is information on websites, but it can be overwhelming to look and go, these are all, like, the average, they're saying there's like 32 different symptoms on average, but it's unique for every single woman, you know. And it can, you could be having, say, hot flushes for a while, and then you can move on to something else. You might get brain fog. And if you don't understand what's happening in your brain, your body, and you think, oh, am I losing my mind? But particularly those word finding difficulties can be really, and if you are then activating your stress response, because there's a really close relationship between the ability to, say, ovulate, there's a really strong relationship between the two of them. So if you're saying, oh, I really can't find that word, and you get really frustrated with yourself, then that can be really difficult and can have a huge impact on your quality of life.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what's frustrating, I think, there is, like, how preventable that is, when so much of the stress can be caused by lack of information, and that doesn't need to be the case.
Yeah.
Looking at the lists of symptoms here, like you say, there's so much that people maybe just would not assume without a level of understanding. And often then it becomes a questioning yourself, a thing that can affect your mental health, a thing that can make you feel like you're out of control or out of touch with your own body and what's happening with it. And only then, when you start to put the pieces together, or you have the conversation with the right person that's like, well, have you thought that maybe this is what it is? That's when you're playing catch up to understand what you're going through.
Say, oh, well, I'm stressed because of all these things, but what, they're not realizing, and they're feeling anxious, and they think, oh, this is new, I've never felt this way before. And they might think, oh, it's just the level of stress I'm feeling.
Yeah.
But it's actually because their hormone levels are fluctuating so much, and they might continue to have periods every month, or they might not notice because time is passing and they don't keep an eye on their menstrual cycle. So there's just so many factors.
Absolutely. And maybe this is a good point to break down some of the terminology.
Perimenopause is the term of this transition in your life. So perimenopause can last anything up to, I've heard, they say between 4 and 7, I've heard 12, 14 years. And it's that period that starts kind of late 30s, early 40s, where your hormones are starting to shift But menopause itself is only one day. And people go, what? And that's really confusing. But it's a bit like pregnancy. When do you know you're pregnant? When you do the test after you've missed your period. But in the case of menopause, it depends what age you are. If you're under 40, then it's 48 months or 2 years after your last period. If you're over 50, then it's 12 months. And then the day after you're postmenopausal, so 12 months in the day if you're, say, 51, which is the average age in Ireland, UK, America, Australia. But in India, it's slightly earlier. It's 47. Now, we don't know why that is. But we know genetics have a role to play in culture, etc., and diet. They all have factors. So it depends. All these different variables. If you used to think menopause was older people in your 60s, mm-hmm. but the average age is 51.
Well, this is it. This is that when the conversations aren't had, people end up thinking all sorts is normal and not knowing other things are normal that they think are not. And, you know, one thing I'm reminded of is that part of that genetic element is that often women will mirror a similar time frame to their mothers when they go through this.
Yes.
And that can be so helpful just to know that and be like, okay, there's actually some kind of basis of what I can predict when this may be happening to me.
Yeah, absolutely. But we also know that if you've had a difficult childhood, if you've experienced trauma, that again can have an impact on how you transition through this cycle. But that can be really distressing if you don't know what's going on. Why am I crying one minute? Why am I roaring my head off the other? Why am I feeling really angry at the world? And then why am I feeling, I'm totally calm? It's like you've been wearing rose-tinted glasses all your life because life has got so busy and you keep going and you don't get a chance. And then you turn around and go, what's just happened? You know, where am I? What am I doing? What do I need? And that can be really powerful for women. So that in shamanism, we talk about women becoming crones or wise women because we get this opportunity to kind of like, we've been around, you know, for 51. We've encountered a lot in our lives. So there's a resilience to women. There is that resilience there because every month they've shed the lining of their womb and they've got up and started again or they've kept going. You know, in Ireland, we're well known for getting on with it. And so you'll see maybe the older generation going, well, what are they going on about? We got on with it. But they didn't because we know that the level of suicide in women in their 40s and 50s is really high. And that's a sad fact that many in many parts of Ireland, women disappeared.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know what was going on. So, yeah, so there's the flip side and the sadness and the just the lack of education. But I see it as an opportunity to really to tap in with yourself. It's a bit like when you take your, you know, when women are going through their menstrual cycle and just before their period, they really can get really pissed off at the world of no patience, but they're being true to themselves. They're being their authentic self and they're going, you know, what's going on? But we can get really stressed with it. Well, I often say to people, if you write down how you're feeling, don't analyze it. Just write down how you're feeling just before your period comes. And then, you know, halfway through your cycle, when you're ovulating and you feel top of the world and you can challenge anything, go back to it and respond as if you would to a friend.
Yeah.
You should be a lot kinder and you'll go, oh yeah, no, that was, I was just maybe ruminating and it was a bit much, but no, that definitely isn't the case. But that could be really powerful. And it's the same with the perimenopause. It's really a great opportunity to tap in with to yourself and notice what's going on. Do the things you always wanted to do. If you know, if that's possible. And it is. You can do, you know, I firmly believe if you put your mind to something, you'll absolutely do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a lovely way of looking at it to find that opportunity to sort of reassess, you know, sort of step back and see where you're at in your life and kind of check in with yourself and what you really want, what you want the next years to bring. And, you know, I know for a lot of women, they can find that quite freeing to, you know, to get to the end of this and kind of be in a new stage with their body. And, you know, some of those expectations can be gone around, you know, I won't be having any more children and that's that decided. But equally, there can be grieving there if people plan to have children
definitely.
And that wasn't what happened.
Yeah, definitely is. It's a loss, but also the relief that you're not going through, you're not having a period every month because it's hard work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pumping blood out of your body every month. And the fluctuations in hormones, And I suppose it's a good way of thinking of perimenopause is that, yeah, it's challenging. And it is challenging. There's no two ways about it. But I think the more knowledge that you have, the better it is. So it's about finding those reliable websites out there. And they exist. Like, menopause societies exist throughout the world that provide that level of evidence-based information. And I suppose that's the other problem, is because there's been such a lack of research done into women's health. Now, that is changing. You know, it's the beginning of a revolution where we're going to have equality in the world, which would be wonderful.
And I also want to highlight something that I know is a part of your clinical practice prior to this around menstruation, where you encourage your clients to kind of share that with you in sessions, reflect on that experience as a way to, you know, understand your emotions. And I remember when you've described it to me before, thinking, what an opportunity there is there to have this kind of cycle that your body goes through, and a lot that you can learn from it.
And I think therapists really need to have an understanding of where clients are in their menstrual cycle. Because it could be one day they walk in and like, oh yeah, I'm great. And maybe you wouldn't be coming for a short while. Yeah, no, everything's good. I'm feeling great. Yeah, I'm feeling a lot better than I did a few weeks ago. And if they're ovulating, so they're in there somewhere, as the Red School would say, they're in there somewhere, then they can cope. Like, we all cope better in the summer when the sun is shining. We feel warm, it's not cold. So looking at that cycle, but also looking at that period just before you take your period and you're feeling really low and you're feeling really tired, but understanding that process, you know, that now you're in your autumn. What do bears do in the winter? You know, before the autumn, they eat lots of food and then they hibernate, they sleep over the winter, you know? So it's an opportunity to really slow down and to do that. Like, what would it look like if society was on, used a cycle, you know, your cycle to plan your life instead of going with just whatever has to be. So understanding your cycle and understanding when it's good to do certain things are going gently on yourself, you know, and understanding that, well, yeah, my hormone levels are fluctuating here. They're going down. So I'm going to feel a bit tired. So maybe it's a time that I'm not on the go 24/7. I'm giving myself the opportunity to slow down,
yeah.
You know?
No, absolutely. And I'm reminded of the last ex of mine that I lived with, and she was very open about where she was at in her cycle and was kind of very helpful for us, because not only is it nice to be included and feel that I'm sort of in the loop and I can sort of be there for her in practical ways, it also, you know, often did make sense of, you know, where she was at emotionally. So there would be times when she'd be extra frustrated and might be wondering why. But I'd encourage her to go easy on herself, and I'd sort of be extra sure to not, you know, not be offended if she's a bit sharp with me one day. And then often a few days later, she'd be like, so yeah, it started. That's what was happening.
And I think what can happen when you're perimenopausal is that those symptoms can get stronger. So you can be even worse than you previously were. So that's maybe a sign of what's going on. But I see the menstrual cycle as a self-care regime, and I think women are very lucky, but we haven't talked about it. We've put it down because, oh, we can't mention periods because we're going to be treated differently, you know? And we need to change that narrative. We need, it's a bit like talking about pregnancy. Like, do you tell your boss you're pregnant? But there is legislation in place to protect women, and it's the same with periods. Same with perimenopause. Yeah, we need to. And I think women go, we can't talk to men about periods. Like, I think that we underestimate you. Because I think when you understand what's happening, like my husband used to say to me, I'm not arguing with you. And I'd be exactly the same and go, I'm sorry. And that's exactly what it was. And even acknowledging, I'm really tired. My body's sore. I don't have the energy or the motivation to do this. I just want to curl up. And you say, could you do this? Then the chances are that your partner will, you know? Or if you're in a homosexual relationship, two females, like that can be hard work. You know, both of you are going through perimenopause. So it's about kind of acknowledging that, giving each other space and you know, until it's the appropriate time to talk. But yeah, I think we need to be more honest with ourselves and with men, you know? You know, society has been brought into this culture of that, oh, you don't talk about periods. You know, when I was born, my dad wasn't allowed into the labour room 51 years ago now it's expected that men will be there. Like men pushing babies in prams or buggies. Being the parent that stays at home that doesn't go out to work. Great couple who have children. There's all these different, you know, different variations of family now, so.
No, absolutely. And, you know, part of that is just kind of being empowered to know how to get through it, you know, to know what's happening for you and know what kind of steps to take. You know, we've covered some of the common symptoms of perimenopause, like mood swings, hot and cold flashes. There can also be trouble sleeping. There's irregularity of periods. There's so many different symptoms, like you said.
Yeah.
Most of them, actually, not everyone even gets, you know, there's so many.
No, about 20% of the population just sails through it. But it affects your bones. It affects your, like, this year, the International Menopause Society's theme for 2023 is cardiovascular health. Because we know that women have heart attacks differently to men. You know, it's a different sensation. So it's important people know that. It's not the going down your arm. It could be a central back pain. It could be a tiredness. So it's important people. And you know, the Irish Heart Foundation would be a really good source of getting that information. Because we know that estrogen, progesterone, testosterone all have a role. Like sex, you know, the atrophy that can happen, you know, your main continence, because your hormone levels are changing, the lining of your womb, it can get really dry. And there is support there for women. And even if they've had, say, for certain women, they can't take HRT, but there is localized estrogen, you know.
Yeah, and like you highlighted there, you know, that's one of those very clear examples with the different symptoms of heart attack in men and women, where for so long there's been little research, little attention paid to that. And so women are losing their lives because it doesn't look like a male heart attack. The symptoms are different. And much like this, there's so much that's preventative, like, you know, urinary incontinence being more common after menopause, during the postmenopause. That's something that in so many cases is very preventable with pelvic floor exercises. But it's having the knowledge that it's common enough, that there is help, that you can talk about it, and it's resolvable in nearly all cases with simple, non-invasive exercises that you could do on the bus and no one would even know.
Yeah, and drinking water, because I think so many people are so busy that they're not drinking enough water. Like, we're recommended is 2 liters a day.
Yeah.
So it's really...
But also you wouldn't assume it, right? Because if you're dealing with incontinence, the last thing you're going to assume is, oh, drinking more water, that will help. You know, if anything, you'd be inclined to go the opposite way.
Yeah, because what can happen is that our bodies go to a particular pH, and if the urine in our bladder is acidic, our body goes, get rid of it, you know? Whereas if you drink plenty of water, then your bladder is able to expand and hold that because it's at the right pH. Stress can have a huge impact on urinary incontinence. But if you're going to the toilet every hour, then there's something going on, you know?
Yeah. And so you mentioned earlier HRT as one of the things that can help ease somebody through the process of menopause in certain ways, you know, can ease some of the symptoms, can level out, because, you know, we understand that your levels of estrogen and progesterone are going down, but that's not a steady process. They're going down over time. There's a lot of up and down, and that's part of the mood.
Like if you were to get a blood test done at, say, 9 o'clock in the morning and you got it done at, say, 9 o'clock that night, your levels are going to be different. So the most important thing about diagnosing if you're perimenopausal is how are you? Are you feeling yourself? And if you're not, you're not. But HRT is what it says in the tin. It's hormone replacement therapy. And it can be wonderful, but it's not for everybody. One, it's a choice that women have that want to go. Some people might say, well, I don't want to do that. Also, their medical background has a huge impact to play. So certain types of cancer can have an impact on whether or not you can take HRT. But we know that it helps with our heart health. It helps with our mental health. It has a huge impact. HRT has been getting prescribed since the 1940s. So what the advice is that if you're perimenopausal, that is when you start HRT. And then it's an individual discussion with your doctor. That's who prescribes it. It's your GP or your specialist, if you're under a specialist. They're the people that prescribe it. And that's, you know, but it's a holistic model. Like, HRT can be helpful, but it's also looking at your diet. It's also looking at your connection with others, looking after your mental health. It's about, I always equate it to being like an antidepressant. An antidepressant does help, but we know going, if you're on an antidepressant, it will bring you to a certain level. And then going to therapy can help you to understand everything that's ongoing and to make changes before you, in this case of an antidepressant, stop it or whatever it is. But it's a holistic, so we need to be looking after our well-being. We need to be connecting with others. You know, we learned through COVID that the importance of being in the same room as other people. We're social creatures, so we wouldn't be here if people weren't social with each other, you know, because people wouldn't have met. Because all any of us is after is that acknowledgement that we are loved for who we are. And that love is a big word, but that acceptance. So when you're going through this transition, making, acknowledging yourself, accepting yourself, accepting this transition. We accept teenagers might bang doors and shout and run off and all this. We accept that. We know that that's the transition they go through. So why is it so different for perimenopausal women?
Why aren't we talking about this? Like Ireland is the first country to have a menopause awareness campaign.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm reminded of also with the pandemic there, how for so many people in my life, it was a time of reassessing.
Yeah.
You know, of I'm not able to go to this job, and you spend time away from the job and you think, I don't know if I want to go back to it.
Yeah.
Or you have the opportunity to sleep more and you're like, oh, I think I've needed 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
But I've never had the chance, or I've not prioritized it.
Yeah.
You know, there are all these elements where we actually got kind of forced to check in with ourselves.
Yeah.
And reprioritize.
And we realized the importance of diet and how important diet was for us. And that, again, has a crucial role to play. You know?
Yeah, eating, living off pot noodles wasn't the pandemic answer.
No, definitely not. So it's a jigsaw. So it's not just about the HRT. And for women that can't take HRT, there is alternatives out there. So do not suffer. I think it's so important because it's amazing what you learn in this space that, yeah, you're not alone.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's, you know, this sort of, the idea of the person beneath, you know, who we all are behind the scenes, behind the mask.
Yeah.
And actually we have a whole lot in common.
Yes. We have more in common than we have differently. And I think that's true for regardless of what sex you were born or what gender you identify as, you know. Yeah. At the end of the day, all we want is to be loved.
Yeah. I mean, that's something, you know, that obviously springs to mind talking to you, that, you know, it's such a heartbreaking part of the troubles for me, that actually so much of the precarious nature of those times and elements of that still continue was about, you know, everyone being in this vulnerable space.
Yeah.
What it is to be from the north being fundamentally complicated, whatever side you're on.
Yeah. But with that vulnerability and that trauma comes a resilience and
also a great sense of humour.
yes, definitely. I think humour can be really protective. It can be extremely protective. It's kind of a fine line, you know, getting into that. The humour where it's kind of, it's like, oh, that's a bit too much. So there's a fine, I think humour is really important, but there's a fine. But yeah, no, I'm really, thank you so much for inviting me on. It feels like a long time since I was on the podcast.
I know. I'm not even, is it 2-3 years? It's a while.
Yeah.
It must be more like 3 at least.
Not more.
Yeah, if not more.
Maybe 4. Yeah. I feel, yeah. It's amazing the journey that you go on as a therapist, you know, behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. I think the journey for me, the whole perimenopausal journey, it's just been eye-opening.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm constantly learning from it and I'm going, wow. And the amount of research that's taken place from where I'm sitting, because I know I'm very much in that world, but it's powerful. And I think back, I used to dread my periods. I used to get really annoyed with myself because I was feeling that way. And now I'm like, it's actually a time of insight. It's a time of checking in and evaluating, where are you in your life? What am I happy with? What am I not happy with? And even just writing them down and going back into them a couple of weeks later, I think that's so beautiful to be able to really listen to yourself.
Yeah.
So, like, if we didn't have periods, you know, we wouldn't be able to have babies, you know? So, and some people don't, but yeah. So I suppose for me, who's never had children, and I wanted to have children, it didn't work out. Like, this whole area is my baby. I'm just so passionate about it because it's just changed my viewpoint of the world so much.
Yeah. No, that's great to hear. And I relate to that a lot with the conversations I get to have that we were talking about off air, like this experience of kind of like stepping over a threshold. And now you're sort of in the inner circle of people that talk about this stuff.
Yeah. And I think the other really important thing to realize is that medicine is very evidence-based. So there's not the evidence. So they'll do a lot of research and they'll do placebo. So they'll have a group of people they're doing research on, but they're a placebo group. And if medicine doesn't have that, then they won't. It's not accepted. So if they haven't researched it, which is so true, like for years, you know, the pharmaceuticals did not go near perimenopausal, near periods. Like all the trials that were done on men because we were too complicated. Because hormones complicated it.
As if men don't also have hormones. It's
yeah.
So stupid.
And I think the thing why menopause has become such a huge issue is that we're the biggest growing demographic. So if we leave the workforce, like we know in Ireland, there's a shortage of people to do the jobs. So if you have experienced women leaving because they don't understand what's happening and they're not getting the support, then, you know, employers have a duty of care to look after them. And there have been trials in the UK about, you know, women having brain fog and not being able to do their job to the best of their ability. And it's maybe shortening down, you know, the times and having extra breaks. It's not rocket science, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. So I see things changing enormously, you know, courses, etc. I think in Ireland over the next few years, yeah, there's going to be, I think, more exciting things happening, you know?
We're getting there. And so on that note, I think we'll start wrapping up there. If people want to learn more about your work or if they're Dublin based and they might be looking for a counsellor, where would they find you?
So they'll find me in Connolly Counselling in Stillorgan, and in the new year I will have online availability as well, so in the evening. But yeah, pretty busy, but yeah, I am available, so yeah. And they'll find me online, just search for Granny Pansy.
Talking about menopause.
I talk a lot about menopause and I talk a lot about periods, but I think I've realised kind of, for me, the importance of them. And we need to have the full picture. I really do believe knowledge is power. If you don't understand what's happening, so.
And not for nothing, with the right amount of knowledge, this can actually be quite an exciting time.
Oh,
you know,
definitely.
That countdown to I might be having my last one soon, you know, so that's the difference between it being exciting or it being terrifying.
And the other thing is, we don't care to the same degree. I think, I know I've heard other people say that. Don't care.
Oh, yeah. No, because I think you do hear that, because you also hear that in terms of aging. You know, suppose you get to your 30s, you care less. You get to your 40s, you care even less. And then menopause is another version of that. Where it's not sort of a insensitive thing towards other people. It's a lack of overdrive self-consciousness.
Yeah, perhaps. You're not holding back because you think, oh, God, what will they think? You're thinking, well, you know, I want to do this, and if they don't agree with it, well, then fair enough. That's got to do with them, not me.
Great. All right, that's us there. Thank you.
Very welcome.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.